Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
You're all very welcome back. Now, this week, The Real Housewives of London begins on reality streaming site Hayu. And it's incredible. It is the 32nd incarnation of The Real Housewives franchise, which has seen the series set everywhere from Dubai to Dallas. And fans of this franchise are as passionate and as evangelical in their defence of their favourite characters as anyone who's obsessed with sports. But what makes seeing the drama of a certain circle of rich women such unmissable viewing? DJ and broadcaster and Housewives aficionado Conor Behan joins me now to break down the broad-ranging appeal of the reality franchise. Are you excited about Housewives London, Conor?
I am, and I was lucky enough to see the first episode this week at a screening in London with the women in attendance, and I was like, oh, we're in for a treat. We're ready to go. And I was just off one episode, so I'm very excited. I think they have a good season ahead. And you do talk about, like, a sports fan. Unless you go, I think we have a good season. I'm like, this is how my friends talk about Manchester United. So, yes, I am excited.
Yeah, I feel as if I put the studio lights down and put the focus on you, we could do Mastermind with Conor Behan. Because you are obviously one of the obsessors. But perish the thought for the uninitiated, or perhaps those who maybe aren't as enthusiastic as you are. It is really, really hard to believe that this Housewives franchise goes back, must be nearly 20 years now.
Yeah. The first iteration of the series, the franchise, aired in 2006, The Real Housewives of Orange County. It had gone into development in 2005 by US cable network Bravo, who had initially started out as like an arts and culture kind of channel, and in the early 2000s had a lot of success at reality shows. They had a huge hit with Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, and they were keen to do more shows in that vein. So they sent a documentary filmmaker to Orange County to kind of look at the gated communities there and the wealthy women and the lives they led, thinking this could be a behind the scenes kind of series. And in the edit, they were like, hang on, let's turn this into something a bit more exciting. And they rebranded it as The Real Housewives. And just before it aired, someone said, let's call it Of Orange County in case we want to do more of these. And it was kind of a riff
which was quite prescient of whoever decided just to put that little geographical twist.
That's
into
big
it.
Money difference there, because at the time, Desperate Housewives was the biggest scripted show on American TV. It was massive over here as well, obviously. And they kind of did something similar to how MTV had a reality show called Laguna Beach, which was billed as The Real Orange County, aka a reality version of The OC, a very big teen drama. So The Real Housewives franchise was a way to do the reality version of Desperate Housewives, to basically do a reality TV version of a nighttime soap opera. And as the show evolved, like, you had the New York franchise aired in 2008, Atlanta the same year, later that year, 2009, there was one set in New Jersey. As the shows developed, the format and the feel really took on the rhythms of the old school kind of Days of Our Lives style soap operas or Dynasty.
Yeah, because even like reality TV, you know, the scripted reality, constructed reality, that in itself has been on a big evolution. But just to go back to this franchise, because it is absolutely head spinning, and I wonder who's got the copyright for the original franchise, but how many countries is it in now?
I believe, as you mentioned, this is the 32nd iteration. So there's Johannesburg, Durban, Lagos, there's London. The US network Bravo has done mainly American cities. They also had one in Dubai, but there's been one that was aired in Amsterdam. Finland recently has gotten a series. There's been two Aussie iterations.
I think was one as well.
Athens was actually one of the first ones, and it apparently didn't do very well because it aired at the absolute height of the financial crisis in Greece, and some people took it as kind of an insult, which is interesting because the American shows aired just a couple of years before the crash really happened in the States, and then they became quite popular because a lot of the rich people on the show struggled or experienced extreme kind of issues with their wealth, and the audience kind of liked seeing behind the kind of facade of these wealthy people whose lives are crumbling. Because that's the thing, the show has this quote unquote aspirational bent to it, but also I think it's a kind of, oh well, I'm almost better off than them in a weird way, or they don't handle this well. There's a bit of schadenfreude or whatever the word is to the shows as well.
What I suppose is common to all of them, you know, maybe no matter how different the country or the way it sort of pans out, is that this is all about women of a certain age, the mature woman. And is that part of the appeal, you know, because we've seen lots of these big shows about younger women, but is it part of that appeal to look into the lives of women? And not all housewives are divorced and everything. There's lots going on in their lives.
The title of the show is almost a bit of a wink wink and a bit if you get it kind of thing, because very few women on the shows now are in marriages. And to be a real housewife is kind of a very separate thing to being a homemaker, whatever that term means in popular culture already. So yeah, I mean, look, you do get women who are sometimes in their late 20s, early 30s who do the show, but generally it's for women in their 40s, 50s, and mainly 60s. And there's something, you know, I don't know if it's a prerequisite, but I think it's women who've lived a life full of ups and downs and highs and lows who are willing to share. And I often think too, there are generations of women who are not as social media savvy and are less worried about what an audience might think. And they're much more willing to have no self-awareness and let it all hang out in camera, whether it be personal life issues, trying to raise their families, divorcing a longtime partner, or just their interactions with the other women. And I think too, like, I'm not trying to say that reality TV is perfect. It really isn't. But it is one of those genres where sometimes underrepresented groups have popped up in these spaces more than they have in traditional scripted TV, because like 32 shows about women in their 50s and 60s wouldn't happen in the scripted universe as much.
So do they endure, do you think, because it brings something to us about the nature of female friendship?
Absolutely. The relationship between the women themselves is really what drives the whole thing. As much as the title might imply their relationship to men or their, you know, singlehood or whatever is the driver, really it is how they interact with each other is what brings you back. You see the real friendships that either they start the show with, they come and go, I'm here because I'm friends with so-and-so, or the ones that blossom on the show. And you often see friendships fracture, sometimes completely beyond repair, or people fall out and get back together in terms of the friendship status and just even how they kind of circle each other and who connects with who. And as much as it's edited and produced and stuff, you can see when the real strands of the relationships are kind of formed. And also these seasons tend to be 12 to 18, maybe 20 episodes a year. So it's like watching soap. You come back week in, week out, and you get your little morsel and you go, oh, so-and-so and so-and-so clearly connected on this trip or over this issue they had or whatever. So that's a big part of the appeal.
Yeah, because I mean, some people can kind of rubbish or poo-poo kind of, you know, these types of series. But as you say, you know, look, I mean, there are conventions on Housewives. You know, you have your own podcast, Housewives and Me, which is, you know, and there's studies, actual studies on this whole phenomenon. So is it unearthing more meaning, or what is the connection, do you think, between the women and the viewers?
I mean, I will say it's great escapism and you can watch it and turn your brain off if you want to, but it's like any pop culture product, whether it be a Taylor Swift album or the Oasis comeback, you can take it on the base, the top level of this person's fab or I love this work, or you can go, what does this say about us culturally? And I think this show, it explores our fascination with wealth and how the other half live, for sure, but really it's about the relationships that women have each other and how we either relate to that or mirrors our own friendships or even makes us go, oh, I hadn't thought of doing that. And even I think something that's very interesting is a big thing in these shows is if someone, two people have an argument or falling out, the idea that they have to patch it up and figure out conflict resolution is a big part of it. If they don't, a lot of the shows stall, they get go on hiatus or people get fired. And that's an interesting mirror, because in our own lives, it's much harder to conflict resolve, right? You're like, I actually don't like my coworker, whatever. But on the shows, they have to kind of patch up.
And look, I mean, and some people have been critical of that. You know, I'm thinking of people like, you know, the Gloria Steinem and others have said, look, well, no, this is demeaning the women. It reduces us to a cliche of, you know, kind of handbags at dawn, women turning on each other. Do you think that there's credence to that?
A little bit. I mean, look, it's reality TV and stereotypes and broad strokes can factor in sometimes. And I don't want to be like, no, they never get it wrong. Of course they have over the course of nearly 20 years. But I think what's kept it going, what pulls people back is for all the people often reduce it to the fights or the screaming, etc. But if you watch a series or a season on one of the shows, you realize oftentimes they're building up to that big confrontation. So it's quite a bit of subtlety of, oh, we're seeing the chess pieces of why we got to the place where at this dinner at a fancy restaurant sounds so lost. They don't, and actually the shows where it is just all fighting don't tend to last very long or do well, or they often get a cast refresh because as an audience, we're like, they're just screaming. There's no context for why
and
we got
so-
here.
I suppose that goes, Conor, into the point of, you know, well, you know, this is entertainment. At the end of the day, a lot of footage ends up on the cutting room floor. So, and there is an editing process that's obviously sort of pushing our buttons. So how real is it, do you think? Look, I looked at the trailer for the London one and I thought, my God, that's wild.
Yes, I mean, it's funny. Absolutely, there's editing and production, cast people who are going to be, some are going to be more propulsive or combustive, some are more like peacemakers. There's definitely a lot of production that goes into it. But I think the sweet spot with this show and all the great reality franchises, whether it's Drag Race or Survivor or what have you, is the element of we've produced this well enough that it's going to kick off, but also the people themselves bring a lot. And having gone to the screening this week, and I did an event with Heyu in Brighton for Pride a few weeks ago before the cast were there as well, and watching them in real life, I was like, oh, you're the same here. And that's been my experience with the American ones that I've met as well. They tend to be very much what you see in person is what you get on the show. So as much as they might go, we're all sending you on a trip to this fancy castle, the actual personalities, you can't actually produce that after point. It has to be
So
organic.
I have to ask you just before you go, Conor Behan, is Ireland just too small, or are libel laws too strict for us to have another go and try and have a Dublin Housewives?
Do you know what, actually, I used to be like, oh, it's the culture where, you know, it's too small a country, but you've hit it there. It could be the libel laws more than anything, actually. I'm just, some of the stuff that come out with the American ones, I'm like, sure, the libel laws will cut that whole series there, like dead in the second episode. That could be our biggest hurdle. So good
Well,
luck to any
I
American
think that's one
company
I
in
certainly would watch, but I really, really appreciate it, Conor Behan. Thank you for joining us, and we'll take a quick
Thank you
break.
so much. Cheers.